Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, talking home improvement on the show today and focusing a bit on the latest trends in remodeling, and a couple of guest experts for you. Chad Spate back with us. He is the owner of Chad's Design Build. And Chad, good to see you again.
Thanks, Larry. Always great to be here.
With us as well, back again, Tony Trapp. Tony is the owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling. And Tony, good to see you as well.
Thanks for having me.
And I should mention that both Chad and Tony are past presidents of NARI of Madison. NARI stands for the National Association of the Remodeling Industry. And we'll probably mention that again and some events that may be associated with it as we move along today. But wondering what questions you have today. Which part of your home are you looking to remodel this year? Or maybe you have a DIY project you need help with. Chad and Tony are here to help. You can call in at 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. I'm going to ask you both this first question. Tony, I'll start with you. What remodeling trends are you seeing in your business?
For our customers, they're interested in more universal design, so things like getting in the house without stairs, eliminating steps in the house, bathrooms where we can have no curbs. And so universal design can be for any age, and it can just be easier for people, but then you can kind of either age in pace or, you know, that sort of thing, making the home work better for folks and not be a hindrance.
Yeah, sounds good. What about you, Chad?
Well, universal design was going to be my primary thing, but the other thing I would say is we still see a huge demand for improved outdoor living spaces, and for us, that's primarily screen porch additions. But, of course, you've got decks and patios and outdoor kitchens, and, you know, people love to enjoy the space outside their home as well.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. So if you're thinking about the projects, one question we pretty much always get is which remodeling project is going to pay for itself when you go to sell, or will any of them?
Yeah, well, so I would say that the research shows that one of the best things you can do is to potentially add a bathroom or expand a bathroom. Let's say you have a powder room that you're able to add a shower to it. Things like that, I mean, that's an item that hits the real estate value kind of assessment chart when, you know, folks calculate what a house is worth. You know, the number of bedrooms and bathrooms is huge. And so to that end, the other thing that might be a pretty sizable payback is taking unused space or unfinished space in the home and turning it into livable space. So sometimes that's up in an attic. There are a number of restrictions on that, but that can certainly be a great way if you can reclaim some of that space and turn it into living space. And then, of course, lower levels are another area that we sometimes can turn into a very comfortable and inviting living space.
Well, it's a lot to think about when you're going to remodel. How do you help clients decide what they should do it in a remodel?
It depends on their goals. A lot of times it starts with design. We get an architectural designer involved or an architect, and then can, you know, like Chad said, where do you build that space? Are you able to reclaim something in the attic or lower level, or maybe it means an addition, or maybe there's a room that's just not used to its fullest extent, and moving a wall or two can really give you that extra, whether it's a bedroom, an office, you know, or a bathroom. So working through some design and then get some pricing going based off that and develop a budget, and you're off and running.
Yeah. I was thinking about my own home, which was a three-story, 1906, four square. And the third floor, we wanted to make a bedroom out of the top, sort of what would be kind of considered the attic. And in the city of Madison, we were lucky because it had been used at one point for a living space. Yep. So we were able to get the approval to do that work.
Right.
Yep. There are some safety restrictions and durability things when you're moving into the attic or the lower level that you definitely want to consider that can impact the project for sure.
Definitely. Yeah, there weren't enough windows, so we had to add a skylight, for example.
Yes.
Because there's a minimum or a minimum amount of
natural light
that needs to come in. And here it is 12 years later, and it still hasn't leaked. So
great.
I'm happy. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. But those outdoor spaces, do those outdoor spaces you were talking about, Chad, does that add value to the home?
Well, that's a great question, Larry, because, you know, again, from a real estate perspective, you know, a lot of times it's a simple kind of calculation of square footage of the living space. And then the amenities like bedrooms and bathrooms. And I mean, the simple answer to that is, of course, it adds value. How much value relative to what it costs is always the trickier thing to figure out. But it definitely adds value and makes a home more attractive to potential buyers that when you have an outdoor space that is inviting.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking as well about something that just flew out of my mind, so I'm going to go to Drew in Fitchburg instead. Drew, thanks for calling, Drew. What's on your mind?
I want to redo a shower that we have in the basement. That's what I want to do is ideally have it be tile. But it's in the corner of the foundation, so it would share two walls with the foundation. And I heard that you should not use tile in that situation because it increases the chance for mold growth. So that is my question. Is tile okay in the corner of a foundation?
I think depends what you're tiling on. If you're going to tile directly on the concrete, that's tricky. Usually in tile situation, there's a wood frame wall or metal frame stud wall, and then a waterproofing membrane or substrate like cement board, and then some sort of, there's lots of different systems. So I think it's, depending what direction you're going, you can set yourself up for success, without being worried about mold necessarily from tile. It's going to be more from the shower. Going into the basement, there's things like you want to be concerned about exterior drainage, making sure that's okay. If you have a sump pump system that's operating and water's going to that properly, there's proper dehumidification in the basement. So there's some systems you want to have in place to finish the lower level. And then there's a whole kind of system to make sure water stays in the shower, and that's designed properly. So there's kind of two separate ways to plan for this redoing the shower, and I think you can be successful with tile if you're mindful of both ways. Chad, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, well, everything you said is spot on, Tony, and I would just add that the physics of a home down in the basement involve drawing moisture into the space. That's just the natural movement of air and moisture in a building. So what happens in a basement is often they're very damp because there's moisture coming in from the exterior walls and the floor. And Tony alluded to the things we do to mitigate that and make sure that it doesn't create a problem in the basement, whether it's just a storage space or if you've converted it to a living space. And so if you were to put tile directly on the cement or cinder block wall or onto the floor, moisture is going to be coming through it into the room. And so, you know, you can just imagine how that is creating a lot of stress on the material and why you might find that it doesn't dry out and that mold would exist in that circumstance. So that's why, as Tony said, we want to build some things and create some systems that are going to allow us to mitigate moisture from the exterior and also keep the shower water within the shower and let it go down the drain.
Yeah, that all makes good sense. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Sean in La Crescent, Minnesota. Hi, Sean.
Yeah, hey, man. Good afternoon.
Hi.
So my question has to do with the exterior of my house. I have a beautiful cedar-sided house, and my south side has been brutally beaten up by the sun and time. And so there's lots of, the cedar boards are probably 9 inches wide. A lot of them have warped, and there's some rot going on around a chimney that goes up. So my question is, can I take LP smart siding, which has a cedar appearance, and just do one side of my house? The rest of my house is beautiful.
I suppose if you could find somebody to do one side.
Yeah. I would say if you can get a drainage plane behind the LP smart side, once you take off the cedar, get an opportunity to work on the house wrap, if there is one there, to improve that and fix it, and then get a drainage gap behind the LP smart side and new trim, that will set you up for success. As long as they're following the manufacturer instructions for installing the LP smart side, it doesn't install quite like cedar. There's a little more gapping and flashing that they want to have for it to perform well over the years and for you to be more successful there. But I don't know, it'd be okay to do one side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't hurt to go online and make a copy of those directions.
Absolutely.
Make two copies. Keep one for yourself and give one to the person who's doing the work.
Absolutely, yeah.
So they follow the rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sean, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Tony Trapp of Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repairs are guests today on the show. Questions for them, give a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at home remodeling and repair today with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build of Monona and Madison. Tony Trapp, owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repairs. Both are past presidents of NARI of Madison. Questions for them, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. And Tony, I know you wanted to add something to our previous call.
Yeah, for Sean and La Crescent, it would be a good time to look at your existing windows on that south side. A lot of times the sun really beats up, like, for example, aluminum clad windows. The seal between the glass and the cladding can fail and water gets in there. And all of a sudden you go to open up a casement window in the summertime and the bottom falls out because it's kind of concealed rot. So take a look at your windows when you're residing. That's a great time to replace them and really get some really good flashing details at the same time. You can do them after the fact, but if you can do windows and siding at the same time, you get the most robust install and keep the water out of your house.
Yeah. And I finally thought of that comment that I was going to make earlier. That had to do with home values, and you were talking about how another bathroom can add a lot of value. And I was looking just at real estate prices in the market, and I saw some 3-bedroom homes that were quite comparable. One was a 2-bedroom, a 3-bedroom with 1 bathroom, and the other was a 3-bedroom with 2 bathrooms. And it was a really significant, it was like $100,000, and they seemed to be pretty comparable homes.
Hmm. Yeah.
So it does make a big difference.
As someone who lived for 3 years in a 1-bedroom home, I can tell you that
a 1-bathroom home.
A 1-bathroom home. Yes, it was definitely something that we decided Never it's better again. To have two.
So much better. It's very, yes, very nice, Chad, indeed. I grew up a family of 5, 6 at one point with one bathroom, and that was the hot seat.
Yeah. Ron in Land O' Lakes, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Ron.
Hi, love your show. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
A quick question. I live up in Land O' Lakes, northern Wisconsin, and have an older home. And as I do remodeling, I was just wondering, is there a device that you know of that would test for mold, that I could test for mold, whether it's in the attic, behind a wall before I rip down a wall? I know inspectors do mold testing, but there's something that I myself could buy that could, you know, help me test for mold prior to doing some of the work?
Yeah, so Ron, great question. I believe that there was a time, and I hesitate on this because I'm not sure how readily available they are right now, but there was a time when at the hardware store or at one of, you know, say a lumber yard or big box home improvement store, there are some test kits you can purchase where you open it up and you leave it out for a certain amount of time. And then you ship it in someplace, and they'll do a mold count on that media that's going to, you know, detect the mold. But, you know, frankly, I'm not sure that those tests are that accurate useful, and it might be of greater value. And that's why I'm hesitating to say it's something you could easily obtain right now. But I remember 20 years ago using one of those.
And now usually we refer a specialist that comes in, and they're doing the sampling and looking with a microscope, either on site or sending it out to a lab,
right?
And looking in specific spots. I mean, if you have a friend that's sensitive to mold, they can come in and tell you really quick. But do it yourself microscope without training, that's
right.
A little tough. Michael, Ron, thanks again for calling. Michael had a similar question. Is there a way for mold in a basement, to test for mold in a basement? And is there wondering about steps to remove mold? And you know, they've had some flooding in the past and feel like there could be mold in the house.
So the one bit of advice that will always hold true, and you can easily buy some equipment to detect this, is to monitor the relative humidity level in your home. And so there are these great little devices that cost $20 to $30 that you can pick up at the hardware store, and it will track humidity and temperature and a few other metrics. And the rule of thumb is that we do not want our homes to ever rise above 50% relative humidity. And the ideal humidity for comfort and the health of the building materials in our homes is 35%. So the range we generally recommend is between 20 and 50% relative humidity. Now, most people will feel like it's pretty dry at 20%. And some folks are still pretty sensitive at 30, 35%. But the general rule of thumb there is that humans can't really distinguish typically between, say, 30 to 50%. And once it gets over 50, you may not realize that it's really wet, but condensation will become a threat in the home and might start causing mold and causing some rot to happen. So if you can regulate that, you know, using your furnace, using a dehumidifier or a humidifier, but older homes typically require humidification in the winter because they're leaky and the air outside is cold and dry, and so we add moisture in an old leaky home. But in a modern home or in an older home that's been properly air sealed and retrofitted, typically your problem's going to be needing to dehumidify it. And there's some great appliances that are high efficiency that are designed to control the humidity even better than what your furnace might be doing.
And I would say if you do have a problem, be careful if you're going to clean it up yourself, because you could make it worse by spreading the spores around and not knowing it or not doing the proper procedures, there's professionals you can call that will help you develop a mitigation plan if you're going to do it yourself. Or there's professional restoration companies or mold mitigation companies that can take care of that problem appropriately and not make it worse.
Especially, I think, in like Michael's case, they had some flooding.
Yeah.
Where you've got a large area.
Like if you don't have proper containment, negative air, and all of a sudden you're just trying to clean up the basement. Now you got spores that are going upstairs and you don't have the proper controls, like Chad says, problem could spread, and that's not ideal.
Yeah. Let's take a call from Mary in Dodgeville. Mary, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me. My question is, I live in an older home that's over 100 years old, and it's never been warm. It's got a crawl space under most of the downstairs. There's a small basement roof cellar under part of the kitchen. Is there some economical, feasible way to actually insulate the crawl space? I had it checked into years ago, and the man, sounded like it was going to be at least $20,000 to do that, which is way beyond my budget. So I'm just going to ask the professionals, is there some way to sort of have this situation corrected?
Yeah.
I would say Focus on Energy should have a list of qualified insulators that you could call up in your area, or even energy auditors that could give you some advice. Usually for the lower level, controlling moisture through putting down a good vapor barrier and getting that sealed up in theory should be done under $20,000. But unless there's some old ductwork that has asbestos, that might complicate the issue, or other hazards that we're not aware of. But definitely Focus Energy is a place to start where folks have good training and would be qualified to take steps and look at the house as a whole system. Usually air's drawing in from the bottom, making your crawl space colder, going out at the top. So that might be a combination of addressing your crawl space and maybe plugging some holes strategically up in your attic, and then looking at combustion safety in terms of like your water heater, your furnace, stove, and making sure you have proper ventilation in bathrooms. All those things are going to work together. So by fixing one problem, you might inadvertently need to address some other things that are happening there as well.
So go online to Focus on Energy, Mary. And you're in Dodgeville. There are plenty of people.
Of the insulators will travel to that area, absolutely.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much. Dan in Appleton, what's on your mind?
Well, good afternoon. I'm curious. So I've got privacy fencing in my backyard, and we're looking to sell the house and wondering if it's makes sense to put privacy fencing back up or leave it down.
So it's up now, so, Dan? Or
yeah, yes, it's currently up.
Oh, but it looks kind of crummy. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's over 20 years old, and there's some wear.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So, that might be, obviously, looking at it would be the easiest way for us to give you a professional opinion. And I would guess, I don't know if you're planning to use a realtor for selling the home, but what I would encourage you to do, if you're going to be talking to some realtors, is to get their opinion on that, because they're really the professionals that are in the business of selling homes, and realtors can often give very good advice on that sort of a question. So that would be my recommendation. And then obviously if the issue is, well, what's it going to cost to do this, then you know, folks that put in fencing would be my first call.
Yep.
And if you leave it in, you're including then a whole series of people who own dogs.
Right.
That's right.
That would love to have a fence, any kind of fencing in the back of there.
It really helps.
Definitely.
Yeah. Dan, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Justin in Madison, your turn. Hi, Justin.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 1920 brick farmhouse that has the original plaster on the interior walls, and it is cold in the winter. It has
had windows updated at some point in the past, and they're not, it's not like I can feel colder through the windows or just insulate the windows. The actual walls themselves are cold. And I've heard of things like putting insulation on the outside of the house, but if it's brick, I don't want to cover that up. Is there any way that I can make it warmer without taking down all the plaster?
Can I ask a question? Are the walls themselves brick all the way through, or brick exterior with wood framing? Do you know?
It's brick all the way through to the back of the... it's brick to, like, furring strips to the plaster.
Oh, so this is like the structural brick of the house that's multi-width of it with air spaces between. That gets trickier. It's almost like a thermal mass. What type of heating system do you have?
It's forced hot water baseboard.
Okay. Ideas, Chad?
That's a challenging one. I mean, you are correct that you could approach it one of two ways, either from the outside or the inside. And I would say if the brick is in good shape, I'd be inclined to look at some potential solutions on the inside, but it's probably going to involve giving up some space to allow...
Yeah.
For a cavity to be created. And
said 1920s. So if you do insulate on the inside, be mindful of the brick and how that might hold up to freezing and thawing if it gets even colder.
Right.
So that's a tricky one with that particular type of instruction. My brother has the same house of 170-year-old brick farmhouse and really cold temperatures, it does get cold.
Right.
Yeah.
So outside's probably
safer, but it doesn't look as nice. I mean,
yeah.
Then you lose that really durable brick. I would recommend talking to a home performance consultant, maybe some engineers, qualified contractors. It could be an undertaking to do that. It might be an energy solution to look at the heating plant. Maybe there's some things you can do in the attic. A lot of times in those aerial house, you can make it tighter and improve the comfort, surprisingly, even with walls that aren't insulated to their fullest potential.
Yeah.
And possibly just some air sealing, which is along the lines of what you're recommending there, too. I mean, that could help.
Yeah, home performance evaluation would be a great check-in for this particular situation to let you know, give you some more informed direction.
Yeah, and we're looking at, I don't know, $500 for a home, and get somebody from Focus on Energy.
Money well spent.
Yeah, yep, that's right. That's about what it costs.
Yeah, and this is a good time to do it too.
Oh, absolutely. And then not only will you have a professional recommendation and assessment of your home that you can then take to other insulation and remodeling specialists, but you will have access to potential rebates if certain improvements are made.
Yeah. Good luck, Justin. Thank you so much for calling. Let's turn to Ann in Madison next. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a brick fireplace in the basement where we never, ever use it. And what I'd like to do is have somebody permanently close it off and use the same chimney to put a fireplace directly upstairs. And I'm wondering, is that possible?
How old is the fireplace? How old is the chimney?
It's the same age as the house. It was built in the early 60s.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, the simple answer, I guess, would be it's probably possible, but it might be more costly than you were hoping. But it really, there are a lot of important functional and safety considerations that go into any appliance that has a flame. And so but I think the simple answer is that it is probably possible to do that.
Yeah, you're talking to fireplace specialists. Like,
yes.
Chad's alluding to clearances between your existing fireplace and the framing. maybe doesn't meet modern codes, making sure structurally, if you're going to do a masonry hearth or something on the first floor, that it can support that additional weight. Maybe a natural gas or electric something that goes through your fireplace flue ends up being the answer. But there's some really good fireplace professionals in the area. Nari has a great list of folks you could contact, Nari Madison, and take a look starting there, and they could give you some advice, and it might lead to some other specialists coming in to, you know, see if this transition makes sense for you.
Might even be that the fireplace on the first floor, not the one that currently exists, might just wind up getting vented out to,
could be,
out the side of the house and yep, somehow plug up the fireplace on the basement.
Those chases can be used for all sorts of things. You're exactly right.
Correct.
Yeah. You have more opportunities than you think.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Thanks, Ann, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. Trista emailed, should you insulate the bathroom vent tube that goes from the ceiling exhaust fan through the attic up to the roof vent?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been in attics where they haven't been insulated and there's been gallons of water inside the vent tube. It's impressive how much condenses inside there. So if you don't have proper insulation and proper flaps that are working, it can lead to some really uninspected things that happen if that gets poked, and then you get a little shower happening in your attic from non-insulated tubes.
Yeah. And also that ice plug that will form potentially in the duct work can actually just close up the duct. I mean, it's all sorts
then.
Of things.
Yeah, so. If it's not insulated, bad things happen.
Yes.
In our climate.
There you go.
Yeah.
Thanks for that question. Let's go to Dean in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Dean.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I'm sort of in the middle of a bathroom ceiling remodel, and the reason I've torn the ceiling out is because I have an odor in the bathroom, and I've had this for, I don't know, almost a year now, and I've done various things to resolve this. It doesn't quite smell like septic or sewage, but it has kind of a sweet, almost laundry sort of smell.
Dead so animal.
I've already accessed the ceiling, no dead animal. So what I did was I've done an incredible number of things. I've run smoke through the pipes and found a little bit of leakage through some of the venting pipes. Replaced all those that had leakage, and then I was like beside myself, well, what else could I do? So I tore the ceiling out to see if there was any mold that developed in the ceiling from a leakage of the fan, vent fan. No, nothing there. I followed the venting from the fan up through the attic and found that it was sufficiently insulated. There was no water in it, and air was still blowing through. And when I disconnected the pipe, the hose, the vent hose, there was that odor was not present there. So I'm really beside myself. It smells a little bit like a laundry when you walk into a laundromat where they dump all the water into the drain trough. It smells a little bit like that.
Hmm. So, Dean, is there any, does the odor vary in intensity at all, or is it just a consistent odor?
It does seem to vary in intensity, but does not seem to vary when the wind blows more.
Okay. And is there anything that you can, I know you're calling because you're not sure what's causing it, but what I would focus on is trying to determine what is happening, you know, what's true when you notice it or when it's stronger that isn't true when it's less and because that that will lead you, I think, to the
Yeah.
Cause.
In this situation where there's odors, sometimes we've used the indoor air quality mold specialist, and they can kind of pinpoint the area and look for common areas in your particular home construction where it could be a minor plumbing leak that's causing this issue, even though you did, you know, it sounds like a smoke pressurization test. There could be a shower leak when it's going to use, like Chad's alluding to, or a loose toilet seal. There's so many possibilities. Or it could just be a chimney that's not even related to the bathroom that's showing up there. Mm-hmm. So we've been through lots of different water leaks. And sometimes it's the issues at the source where you smell it, and sometimes it's further away and happens to migrate there, or it's like in a basement area or a ductwork. There's some critters that moved in there, and when the heating and cooling system kicks on. So trying to pay attention, like Chad said, to those things. Is this one the heating and cooling system's on? Is it a change with humidity? Is it a change with temperature, season, or usage of the bathroom? That'll help you determine maybe what specialist that can help you dive into it.
And one other thing, Dean, is there a shower stall or a sink in the room that is not used regularly?
I am aware of that. I've made sure there was water in the trap.
Okay.
And so the reason I tore the ceiling out was because I thought maybe that there was a vent line from the shower, the bathtub coming across the ceiling that was leaking. But then I found out it was vented laterally to the sink. So that was odd.
And so that's my other question are you confident that every device that drains is also vented?
Yes, every I know that every device that drains is vented.
Okay.
I would say check windows out and exterior roof flashing. Sometimes that could have a issue by higher moisture levels in the bathroom. If there was a little bit of mold that happened in there, then you'd smell it more often in that space because there's higher moisture levels in that room.
So given that, how would he check that? Or is there someone that could come in and check for that?
Some building inspectors, the mold specialists are usually familiar with those areas to keep an eye on. Roofers, siders sometimes will know what's a common area to look for, but they're not necessarily going to be the mold odor specialist. So that's where there's kind of two in Madison that are specialized in knowing where those areas commonly happen. But you're up in Sturgeon Bay. I don't know if they travel up there. So I'd look for that. That's typically who I go to in our marketplace. You, Chad?
Well, the only other thought was monitoring the humidity in the room. I would recommend that and making sure that the ventilation fan is actually bringing down the humidity when you're creating it and then using the fan, because it could be that if the fan isn't really doing its job, the room is always a little moist, and then once it reaches a certain threshold, you're going to have that odor potentially.
And you can actually measure the fan volume yourself with it's called the Canadian bag method. You get a large plastic bag, and you make almost like a butterfly net. You calculate the volume of the bag by cubic feet, fill it with air, hold it tight to the fan, and count how many seconds it takes to suck the air out of that bag, and then you can change that into cubic feet per minute. And you want to have a minimum of 50 tested in the field. So even though you have the right venting, it's insulated, there could be some bends in the ductwork or a termination that's not working properly. And this is more scientific than just holding a couple pieces of tissue paper up there.
I've done.
That's a good, quick, and dirty way to do it. But this is a way without buying the $1,000 manometer or the testing equipment that the home performance people are going to have, where you can do it at your home, and it's just as scientific, but not as fancy.
Dean, good luck. It sounds like you've done a whole lot there. I was thinking as he was talking about all the things he's done.
He's got a really
good start.
I wonder
if it's someplace else other than that's location.
Those are tricky ones to chase down. Good luck.
Yeah.
Thanks again for calling. Our guest today, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, and Tony Trapp, owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repairs. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today as we talk home renovation and repair. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build of Monona and Madison. Tony Trapp from that area as well, owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repairs. Great to have both of them with us. And you can call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. And Dan in Madison has a question for us. So let's go there. Hi, Dan. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. So I purchased a house a couple months ago, no contingencies. So basically, I got all the inspections after.
Yeah.
And the cinder block foundation is warped in about an inch and a half or so on the long wall, which is like a 20 foot or something. And my question is, so we want to finish the basement. It's currently an unfinished basement. And I've gotten different ideas and different quotes on carbon fiber straps or steel beams, like that are adjustable, that they say you can kind of wind them once or twice and it sort of corrects the wall. And I'm just wondering if there are any suggestions on what would be a better solution and how far they could be corrected to get them kind of straight.
Tony, you want to start on that?
We've had projects where we've done both depending on the circumstance. I know there's even another company that had kind of a self-adjusting steel beam where you have to crank it. There was some sort of spring built in. In terms of getting them straight again, sometimes it's worth it to consult a really qualified mason and see what they think. I mean, to really get it straight, you're excavating probably on the outside and a little bit more invasive solution than a carbon fiber or steel beam. And they can look at that brick and know what it is, or even consulting a structural engineer if you want to go that far before you finish it. Now's the time to really consult with all the experts before it's covered up and you're having to remove that finished space to get at that wall system. Chad,
anything to add there, Chad?
Not really. I mean, those are all the things you have to think about, and certainly the further you go to rectify the problem, the more it's likely to cost, but some of that's money well spent. So,
especially with foundations, if you don't get that right, it can be just exponential.
Yeah.
Dan, there you go. Thank you for calling. Warren in Oregon, your turn. Hi, Warren.
Hi, gentlemen. Last fall, I was in the process of replacing numerous 30-year-old casement windows, high-end stuff, and in the process discovered that about seven of them, are completely rotted out on the bottom frame of the casement. And this morning, Anderson Windows tells me they no longer replace that vintage of window. It was manufactured in 92, 93. So what are my options? Do I have to rebuild? Replacing the entire bay of windows would be very expensive.
You're in Oregon. Chad, I think there's a local company that actually might be able to rebuild some of the sashes. I have not used them, but I looked into them and another customer had.
Right.
We have ordered sashes from the manufacturer because the sash is the part of the window that moves. The frame is generally okay. And what we talked about earlier is how those rot out, and you can replace the sash. It does cost money to get one stain to match, and then you are taking a gamble that the rest of the seals, the window and the hinges and the flashing is in good working order, so you're investing money in an older window. I mean, you're kind of doing a window restoration.
Right. The big challenge is that each, you know, if you add up all the parts, which is to say if you're completely rebuilding this large window, you're probably going to spend as much or more by the time you're done and still have an old frame. Depending on how extensive the repair is, because certainly if you could get the sashes replaced by the manufacturer, which it sounds like you cannot, that would be the path of least resistance and probably the best value. But it may be that, unfortunately, the the best economic decision might be replacing the whole unit, just because of all those other factors that will be at play.
With that early 90s window, the flashing usually has room for improvement. So if you do do full replacement like Chad's thinking about, that would be a great time to integrate that with the siding and make sure you have really good flashing and backup, like pan sills and drainage, to have the best installation and air sealing.
Right.
Good luck, Warren. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Donna emailed us with a suggestion for the caller with the bathroom odor problem. Donna says to replace the toilet. Just replace the toilet. Donna had the same problem and replaced the toilet, and that solved it.
Those wax rings can sometimes, there's just a minor movement and you can get some odor coming out there.
Right.
Or different seals. And that's, you know, depending on the smoke test that he did with the pressure test, that might have got that or maybe not. So it's a good suggestion.
It's an excellent suggestion, actually.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good.
Donna, thank you for that. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. We started to talk about trends, but we've been answering a lot of good questions from our callers and our listeners. But I did want to get back to that for a minute or two at least here. And kitchen remodels come to mind first for some reason. What's in style for cabinets these days? What's the anything new and different, or what kinds of trends are people asking you for when they are talking about?
For colors, I mean, I haven't done all white kitchens. There's a mix now, so it's okay to have different colors in there. And the countertops, it's still the solid surface, like a quartz or a granite, has been popular.
That's still popular?
Yeah. Right. Farmhouse sinks have been popular. Depends on people's needs. Opening up the kitchen is definitely still popular for many folks. Getting kitchen ventilation. A lot of times it's an old appliance breaks and it's been built into the original kitchen, and the new one doesn't fit the space, and that leads to a whole kitchen remodel, because how do you fit that tiny space for the old refrigerator that was a smaller size, or an oven that was a built-in wall oven,
right?
And then making that fit. So sometimes that drives the new kitchen remodel.
Yep.
I've seen some new things on backsplashes, that people are going to, like, having the backsplash go all the way up the...
Or even open shelving. Some people like that, where you don't have to have cabinets that are with doors. Like you're talking about, Larry, a full wall of tile, and they have some floating shelving for easy storage. You can see it. Don't have to open a door. If you have some nice things to display, that works great, too.
And we continue to see improvements in the hardware that allow your cabinet spaces to be more accessible. Pulling down having upper cabinets where when you grab the door, you can pull it down to you, things like that. I mean, they're just
the lighting and size cabinets has been great with LED tape light. Like Chad's talking about the accessibility for the corner cabinet, there's so many more options now than getting down your hands and knees in the headlamp to try to find that bowl that you lost.
I sure wish I could pull down those cabinets that are way up there where I have to get on a step stool to
it exists. Yeah.
And I did not know that.
Yeah. Maybe it's time to remodel the kitchen, Larry.
Well, it's only been 12 years.
Oh, wow. Or update, yeah.
I'm thinking that might not be a bad thing to look at, though, with those cabinets. Well, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Tony Trapp of Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repairs, our guest today. And they'll be with us for another half hour on the show. We are going to take a quick look at the news, and we'll find out what else is in store for us. But you can join in right now if you want to. You could email us to talk@wpr.org or give a call, and we'll put you on hold for a couple of minutes, and then we'll get you on the air. The number to call, 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks so much for joining us today on WPR News, talking home improvement on the show. Larry Mueller here with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Tony Trapp, owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repairs. Just a quick mention, at 12:30, we'll talk about adding a sauna or sauna to your home. I'm going to ask the expert about that later on. Anyway, for now, it's home improvement, and looking forward to your questions and comments. Before we get back to the phones, Chad, the Build Remodeling Remodel Expo is coming up.
Yeah, so when you had asked at the end of the last hour about, you know, trends in kitchen design and remodeling, mm-hmm. and bathrooms and all that, anything residential with respect to remodeling or new home building, the Build Remodel Expo is coming up here the last weekend of January. That's the 25th and 26th, and it's on the west side of Madison at the Marriott. And there'll be all sorts of great seminars and opportunities to meet vendors and contractors to talk about all of these things. So I'll be there, and, you know, I'll invite the public to come on out.
It's so what's the date again? Are the dates?
The 25th and the 26th of January.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you go online to, I believe it's the Build Remodel Expo.
Been to that in past years.
Yeah, it used to be just the NARI Remodeling Expo, and we partner now with MABA, which is the Madison Area Builders Association, to put on like one big show, because MABA used to have a big springtime show that went away probably 10, 15 years ago. Yeah. And, you know, shows are struggling a little bit. Expos are kind of like shopping centers. You know, mm-hmm. there just aren't that many people walking through them anymore. But we find that the people that do come out are glad they did, because there's a lot of access to those of us that are in the business, and it's just a great opportunity to have a chat. So, and I mean, I'll say that I'm always grateful to be able to come on this show, and I see many people at that show that tell me, yeah, you're the guy I listen to on Wisconsin Public Radio. So thank you for that.
Very cool. You mentioned chats, and Chris in Wausau wants to chat with us. So let's go to Chris in Wausau. Hi, Chris.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a floor in the basement I want to replace. It is done right now in, they refer to it as rolled goods, it's linoleum, I guess.
Okay.
And it's been down there for probably 35 years. And I'm thinking about pulling that out and putting in the flooring that they use, like in garages where they do the speckled, because it's concrete underneath. I've never had any water in my basement, so it's a dry basement. What do you think?
I think it sounds like a decent plan. I would recommend that to get an asbestos test on that resilient flooring. It could be the adhesive or the vinyl itself. You want to make sure you're not going to have issues. Some of the resilient flooring can have high levels of asbestos. And so if that does turn up positive, you get a qualified abatement contractor to remove that for you. And it's not that expensive to do it right. And then talking to different epoxy folks about that process and what makes sense for you, there's lots of different ways to do that. And they're going to talk about proper preparation and, you know, thinking about maybe some of those appliances. If you're going to do it in the utility room, do you want to move those to get the epoxy underneath? We have had rare situations where it sounds like you're okay without having liquid water in, where there could be high moisture pressure and it actually blow the epoxy apart, because it is almost acting like a vapor barrier. If you ever want to add drain tile and you don't have that, this would be a great time to do it before you seal up that floor and have to break it up. Or thinking about your in-floor drain waste vent lines that might be cast iron if it's an older home, getting those replaced before you invest all the money in the finished floor. So just being mindful of those things that are below the floor, and this is a great opportunity to do that ahead of time and just doing a hazard assessment to make sure you don't create any issues for yourself.
Yeah, All makes good sense. Thank you, Chris, for calling. Susan in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Susan.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a 40-year-old home, and I have a front porch that is runs the length of the front of the house, maybe 4 feet wide by 30 feet long. And the front 6 inches of that porch have a crack and is subsiding slowly over the years.
So this is a concrete?
Yes.
Okay.
And we've been patching the crack, knowing it's a temporary fix. There's 2 posts that hold up the front, like a roof that is over the porch. And those posts were someone added an inch to the base of those posts when they redid my roof. But I'm thinking that the footings were not installed properly. And how do I go about fixing this?
Oh boy.
Well, this is a great challenge for us, Susan. Thanks for the call. There are a number of things that could be going on here. You could be correct that there is a problem with the foundation or the footings that's causing this separation. I guess I'm not super clear on where is the crack on the floor, or is it down on the face of the porch?
It is on the floor that I walk on.
Okay.
And it's only sunk maybe an inch or two in the last maybe 20 years.
Has it sunk
so
by the house?
So it's low, but...
Or
pardon?
Has it sunk by the house or the outside edge?
It is out by the edge of the porch.
The outside edge.
You know, where you...
Yeah.
And this
is
concrete or a wood frame structure?
Concrete.
The floor is all concrete, right? So to replace the footings, I think I would have to bust up the entire concrete porch, and you know, jack up the ceiling to hold up the ceiling, remove the posts, and then redo all the footings.
That is a possible direction. There are some foundation specialists that might be able to do some lifting. That would be one person to consult, maybe a structural engineer. Without knowing that exact, if it's piers or a frost wall, there could be some underlying soil conditions. Being mindful of buried utilities in that area coming out of the front, sometimes there's water and sewer that you want to not disrupt those. But yeah, you're going down the right path of keeping an eye on it for sure. I don't think there's going to be a quick fix, unfortunately, in this situation.
If it is actual post footings as opposed to a continuous foundation wall, which is frankly what I would expect for a 40-year-old home, but if it isn't that, you might be able to utilize some helical pylons that can be driven in to reinforce what you have that might end up being... very effective and less disruptive, but part of it will be how to, you know, not just prevent additional settling from happening, but protecting the integrity of that floor, of the concrete floor, and it may need to be replaced.
Yeah, if the floor is directly on the ground and there's separate footings from the floor, that might be a different thing. Like sometimes you can get away with mud jacking or foam jacking, but this sounds maybe elevated a little bit. So Chad's got some good advice. There are alternative solutions than starting completely over based on your exact situation.
Susan, does that help?
It does. It sounds like I need to contact a structural engineer to take a look at it.
That would be the best place to start, because they're going to give you a neutral, really solid opinion, and they'll have a plan that you can go to contractors that will be safe and durable.
Yeah. There you go, Susan. Thank you so much. Mekana in Blaine, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi. Thank you for calling.
This is Blaine from Mekana. I had my windows replaced. I bought a house about 4 or 5 years ago now, and I had the windows replaced 3 years ago with Anderson by Renewal, and I've been having issues with water running on the outside of the window. And they've been there several different times, and it's like the seal or something like that. They're casement windows, not casement, but double hungs. And I'm assuming that they have something to do with the installation, but all of the windows have water running like on the outside of the window and then on the outside of the screen. So any ideas what might be causing that?
So the folks that have looked at this, are they suspecting that it's condensation due to air leakage? Or?
Well, that's the only thing I can see that it would be, because I don't know. I can't imagine it would be anything else.
Is it a single-story home or a two-story home?
It's a single-story.
Okay.
Has a basement, obviously.
Okay. And does it happen on all sides of the house, or is it specific to one side?
All sides.
Okay.
Does it happen in the wintertime only?
Yeah, because it freezes when you open the
Bingo.
Yesterday.
Do you have a humidifier on your furnace?
No.
No.
And how old is the home?
It was built in 1990.
So okay. Well, I would. Have you monitored the humidity in the home?
Are we cashing or depositing?
Cashing.
Can I ask how are you searching?
It's about 38-40%.
Okay.
No, that's about right.
That's.
You know, if you want a neutral opinion to see if the windows were sealed up without, you can always pop off some trim and make sure there's a good air seal. With the renewal by Anderson, usually that's kind of a pocket or an insert window. So the original window frames in that 90 construction, there might be some air leakage around them. So it might not, you might have to remove some interior trim and do some additional air sealing. And then the windows you put in will hopefully perform better. If you get a home performance test and they run the blower door, they're going to be able to see that and feel that really quick. It sounds like you're not adding additional humidity through a whole house humidifier, but if you don't have working bath fans or if there's a lot of wood storage or plants or fish tanks or higher moisture loads, it's going to exacerbate that issue. But we've had situations where you've talked about someone's put in a good quality window, the installation's been okay, but the original installation wasn't as robust as it should be, and it's leading to further problems. So that would be something to look into.
Yeah, I think Tony's really on to something there. Blaine, the great thing about the home performance evaluation, if you can find an evaluator through the Focus on Energy website to come, is that you will likely identify the cause of this problem and the cost of that assessment will be offset by implementing the solution, because you'll likely have some potential rewards that will be given to you on top of just solving your problem, which is, I know what you're looking to do.
And there could be other issues going on that you can't see. So if we have this water condensing and running outside the window, let's say there's some air leakage around an exterior outlet and it's happening inside your wall and it's going unnoticed.
Right.
The home performance evaluation is going to give a holistic view, not this spot area. So there's not a unnoticed problem happening. You're going to have a greater chance for success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So go to Focus on Energy and find someone in your area. I'm sure there's somebody in the Blaine area that would be able to do that for you.
Or McKenna,
Good luck.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
McKenna
area. Sorry, Blaine. I don't know how I got that turned around. But anyway, there's your answer. Gene in Madison, your turn. Hi, Gene.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My question is about a water softener that doesn't seem to be using the salt, like for the last few months, maybe even up to 6 months. Is this a replacement issue, or can a water softener be regenerated somehow?
There are companies that can take out the media and replace it and rebuild the heads. A qualified plumber will, or even a water softener specialist company, will be able to advise you. In our experience, in our marketplace, usually it's more effective to get a newer one. And then making sure it's sized appropriately. We've seen sometimes, depending on the water usage in your house, they're undersized, so they don't work well. They have a bypass feature that, let's say there's two showers going, you're doing washing at the same time, it might not be providing enough softening for the usage of the house. So making sure that they're doing a fixture count and a volume check. If it is replacement, it might be time. Some of the newer ones are even more efficient. They don't run on a timer, so they're using less salt, and that is better for you and less water, or they're monitoring the water that you use. So there might be some benefit to replacing that appliance. They do have a lifespan depending on the usage, and there's some better technology out there.
Gene, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Kurt in Menominee, your turn. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I have a couple questions regarding venting in a bathroom. Our home is fairly new. We just moved in 4 years ago this month. And the most pressing question I've got is recently, this week, one of the vents started dripping water out, you know, just right on the floor. And you know, the temperature, outside temperature, probably about 10 degrees, inside temperature, maybe 65, 68 degrees. And this is the first time it's happened, so I'm not sure what changed.
Yeah,
so it's probably just condensation that is caused by the cold snap that we're having, and and I don't know if you heard us talk a little bit about this issue earlier in the show, but you know, it could be that the condensation has been happening up in that duct for a while, and now that we've had some pretty cold weather over an extended period, that freezing has created something, you know, has changed, so it's gotten worse, and now you're seeing that dripping out of the fan. But the solution is going to involve inspecting all of the parts of that, you know, ventilation duct, and making sure that the damper is operating just on the duct side of the fan, and that the duct is in proper order, sealed, insulated. The good news is that it's probably not too difficult of a fix, depending on the access to that space.
Yeah. Sometimes even mice will come in there and chew through some ductwork and cause issues, or a bird has created some issues with the ventilation outside, so those animals can get in there and change things for you. We've seen some of the terminations get blocked up by debris, and that needs some addressing as well. So Chad's exactly right. Inspect that really well. And if it's not that immediate thing, look elsewhere. There could be a roof leak or a chimney leak or something else. That's more rare, but it does happen.
Yeah. I had that kind of that situation. I just had a loose shingle, two shingles on the roof, and that was all. Replace those, and that was all it took.
Sometimes it's simple and easy, and it's great.
Yeah.
Good luck, Kurt. Thank you so much for calling. Stephen in Bayfield emailed. He wants to know, after knowing where Digger's Hotline has marked, so you got those flags. I've got a couple sticking out in my front area as well. How far can you usually, away from those flags, can you... dig before you hit a service?
Usually it's about 18 inches that they say you're supposed to carefully hand dig. And with the OSHA requirements, if there's high voltage, you're supposed to use specialized tools and protection. Sometimes you're surprised that the high voltage line's a lot smaller and doesn't have a lot of protection. So it can be dangerous if you're getting really aggressive with the shovel. And commercial sites or public utilities, you'll use a hydrovac truck where they're using water and a big vacuum truck to be really safe around the utilities. But on residential lines, it also makes sense to call Digger's Hotline. Even if you call them previously, you know there could have been something that happened with an underground burial that you weren't aware of. So it's free. It's a safe thing to do. And you don't want to be the person that ends up on the news. So be careful out there.
Yep. No, absolutely. Kim in Viroqua emailed that they have a four-square home built in 1915, original windows and wood siding. They'd like to replace the windows and eventually the siding with composite siding. Are you able to suggest a reputable window brand or local carpenter? This is in Viroqua area, that they will be a little less costly than Pella. They're assuming that the windows will have to be custom made.
Hmm. Well, so I don't have someone to recommend, and I'm not for Viroqua. I'm not sure who to.
There may be an RA member. I would say first check the website to see if anyone travels that distance. I don't think there's a chapter in that far western part.
No, I don't think
so. State.
But. I mean, I would use other sources to vet potential contractors. I'm sure there's some qualified window installers out there, and I think you might be surprised. I mean, a home from the 1950s probably has standard windows.
1915.
Oh, 15. I'm sorry, 15. I misheard. Yeah. Well, so that is possible.
And there's 20 windows involved.
Right.
20 windows. I mean, it is an investment.
It is a big one.
So if you do get an economy window that doesn't last as long, you might be buying those again sooner than you'd planned for, or not have the service if you do have an issue. So by going with some of those bigger brand windows, the service is the part that really helps if something goes wrong.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, here we are out of time.
It goes by so quick.
We never did get to all the questions I had about living rooms and bathrooms and kitchens, but we got a few of them done, and maybe another time we can do it again. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
For having us. Yeah.
Been a real pleasure. Chad Spade is owner of Chad's Design Build of Monona and Madison. Tony Trapp, that same area, owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repairs. Both of them are past presidents of NARI. And the Build Remodel Expo, again, is January
25th and 26th.
25th and 26th at the Marriott.
West Side.
There you go. And by the way, full disclosure, should mention Chad's Design Build and Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repair are two of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors. Have you ever sat in a sauna or a sauna and enjoyed it? Or maybe you're thinking about putting one in. Coming up, we're going to talk about how you can do just that. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Song in the sauna at the beginning of our segment here, sung by Stephen Sokala. He's from Minnesota. I think it's Sokala from Minnesota. And a good way to get us into talking about saunas or saunas, as I've always called them, saunas. They outnumber cars in Finland, I'm told, and you can find them, of course, in gyms, spas, city apartments, and country cottages. Way back when I was a much younger guy, the apartment complex I lived had a sauna, and it was a lot of fun to use it. Their popularity is growing here in the U.S., and so today we're going to be talking about installing one of your own, and you could do it in your home, or you could do it just outside your home if you want to do it that way. Our guest Joe Torino, he owns Soulful Saunas in Viroqua and builds indoor and outdoor saunas. And maybe you have one already in your home. Let us know why you love it, or maybe you're looking to get one. Give us your questions at about sauna design at 800-642-1234. Give a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Joel Torino, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry, for having me. I appreciate being here.
Why did you decide to start a sauna business in Viroqua?
Well, growing up in northern Michigan with the Finnish-inspired culture, saunas were a big part of our lives. And it was an every Friday night thing to walk down the street to my aunt's house and have sauna. And eventually my father put one in our garage or our cabin up in the UP. And so it's been something that I've enjoyed all of my life. And probably about 30 years ago, my wife and I talked about, you know, loving sauna so much that someday maybe we should do that as a business. And come 2020, after 38 years of working in the industrial corporate manufacturing world, I thought, well, maybe now's a good time to do this. So we started with a nice log prototype at our home here in Viroqua. And put it next to a spring, so it has the nice hot wood fired as well as the cold spring coming out of the hill. And we started that, and it just seemed like the right thing to do. And away it went. So we've been making them pretty busily ever since.
Oh, that's cool. So there's interest out there.
There is a lot of interest, and it's been growing. I remember when I first started the business, I reached out to some of my suppliers for the electric stove companies, the bigger names, and I asked them, I said, what's the seasonality of the saunas? Do you see it more in the summer, more in the winter? And they said, since COVID came along, it has been a very high flat line of demand for the sauna material, sauna products. So, It's been quite busy. You know, there has been some up and downs, but yeah, we're pretty busy right now.
Renee in Viroqua has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Renee.
Good afternoon. Yes, I've had a sauna for 4 years. Joel custom built it into a building that I had existing. And I would say I do use it year round. There's a few days in August when it's not quite as calling my attention, but I really do love it.
Oh, Renee, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. So you got a satisfied customer there.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Renee. Yes. We talk often about saunas, her and I.
And she used sauna. And, you know, I got to say, there was a little bit of discussion because I always had used the term sauna. And sauna, I mean, it does it make any difference to you?
Well, it doesn't, but you know, the sauna is the authentic Finnish terminology or dialect, right? And so I oftentimes have to tell people and use the word sauna when I'm getting them interested in what I do. Once they understand it, oh, okay. And then eventually I will transform them to being sauna speakers.
I love that. Oh, man. Well, here is Renee had one added to a building in her home. When you think about adding a sauna to your home, well, first, what does it add to your life? Talk about that.
Well, you know, there's a lot of opinions out there. And for it to be in certain European cultures for hundreds, let alone thousands of years, I mean, there is a benefit to it. Personally, myself, I sauna 4 to 5 days a week. I have a wood-fired sauna that I use. And of course, in my business, I make a little bit of scrap with my wood scrap, so I heat with that. I sleep a whole lot better. I have a much better feeling in my skin. It helps with my muscle relaxing when I get stiff joints. I'm 65 years old, so I tend to get a little stiff from time to time. There are many benefits. They talk about it being similar to a brisk walk. So if you how you feel after a brisk walk, it helps with your heart rate. And the sweating alone is cleansing to your skin and to your body. So there's many, many health benefits to it.
Thinking about it, I think there's two main types of saunas, aren't there? The traditional sauna and there's what, an infrared?
There's an infrared sauna, which is, it's basically light-based. So it emits a wavelength of light. Where I don't work with those, I do radiant saunas, so wood-fired stoves, electric stoves, LP stoves, because of those, that's the realm that I grow up in, and that's the realm that I build in.
Roughly, how much should you budget if you want to own one? I suppose it depends on a lot.
Well, it
things.
Depends, yes, because it's like remodeling your kitchen, right? Mm-hmm. Design drives cost. So when people ask me those questions, I have to give them a range. Okay, so you can go anywhere from $5,000 to $40,000, depending on what you want to put in, wood species, you know, type of stove, type of insulation, size is a big thing. So I really talk to folks about learning about their lifestyle, because integrating a sauna in your life should enhance your life. It should be integrated into your life, not just something that you do once in a while. That's where the real benefit comes from.
Yeah. I was thinking about the one in the apartment complex that I lived in. I think that one seated about 8 people.
It's big, yeah.
That's a pretty good size one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing, let's put it that way, I'm guessing that one that would fit 2 to 4 is probably the more common?
It is pretty common. I've gone into homes and people have this idea of what they want. And they, you know, they'll say, well, I want it big enough for my whole family. And then we start talking about their family and their lifestyle. And this one family in particular, she said, well, my son's 18 and my daughter's 17. And I asked her, how often do you think all of you will sauna at the same time with the kids being that age? And so she went from a very big sauna to something that was 4, 5 by 7, because in reality, it's going to be her and her husband. It's going to be her daughter and her girlfriends. It's going to be her son and his buddies, right? And so we are able to basically right-size the sauna for their family and their lifestyle. Now, on the other side, if you got a family that's young children are excellent to come into saunas. And once they start learning about the benefits and feeling the sauna, it's going to be with them their whole lives. So now that's got to be a little bit different.
Size. Yeah. So you need to do some good communication with the clients to figure all that out.
Absolutely. And I spend a lot of time with my customers early on. If I go back and look at my past orders, from the time a customer first reaches out until I deliver a sauna to them, there is 50 to 60 emails back and forth about many different things. But yes, it's learning about their lifestyle.
Joel Torino, our guest today, he owns Soulful Saunas in Viroqua. It's great to talk with him about saunas. And I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts. The number to call, 800-642-1234, email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking about saunas on the program today with Joel Torino, who he owns Soulful Saunas in Viroqua. Great to have him with us. And callers online, so let's take some calls. Wenzel in Amherst, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I'm all for saunas. I mean, I've had one for years, and to say nothing of marrying a full Finnish lady from Douglas County, Maple area. But a couple of quick comments on side of that. Years ago, Larry, you had an author, a Nordskeg, Michael Nordskeg, that was talking about a book he and another guy wrote, The Opposite of Cold, the Northwoods Finnish Sauna Tradition. It's full of, you know, a lot of photographs and some stories and all that sort of thing. And we got, you know, our two kids grew up in that sauna of ours. And so we each have a copy of it. But recently I thought I'd try to get a UL-approved sauna stove, which I got out of Minnesota, and I forgot the name of it. It cost almost $3,000 by the time it got delivered. Works real well, but, you know, because insurance companies and your guest would probably comment on this too, but they, at least around me, they don't want to insure our my barrel stove, quite frankly. So that's, I guess, my comments, and I can't, I like the sauna pronunciation and my Rantala from home wife.
Wenzel, thank you so much for calling. And he raises some interesting points there, Joel.
Yes, yes. Thank you for calling, Wenzel. Yeah, the UL listing is a very important thing when it comes to wood-fired saunas. And I have replaced stoves in people's saunas because maybe they bought the place and their insurance company comes along and says, that stove's got to go. So there, yes, he's right. There's only one up in northern Minnesota that I know of that has a UL listing. There may be others. And I do sell a lot of those stoves. It's a very robust built wood-fired stove. And about the author, Mike Norskog, he's a friend of mine. He doesn't live very far from me, matter of fact. So we talk saunas every time we bump into each other.
I remember that show with him as well. John in Eagle River has a question. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, great. Yeah, I've got an 8x12 old outbuilding on a place I'm going to put a cabin in, a sauna in. And it's got good bones, but it's got no insulation. Like, it's just going to be a bare building with a roof, and I'm going to put a sauna in there. It's got a cement floor. Two questions. What do you do for insulation? I've seen people putting insulation in, people not putting insulation in, so I wondered about that. And then secondly, how do you size the stove? In that 8x12 building, I'm going to have a small changing room, and it's going to probably be a four-person sauna, pretty small. How do you size a wood stove for that?
Well, great question, John. Thanks for calling. So I do a lot of quoting, and I have built a few of saunas inside existing buildings. So your first question about the insulation. The insulation is your choice. I mean, years ago, some of these old timers, they didn't put insulation in. I know the old Finns used to fill the walls with sawdust because they just needed a thermal break in there. A lot of people will use fiberglass. A lot of people will use mineral wool for either one of those. The right thing to do is use whatever you use, make sure that it's installed properly, that there's not any gaps, it's not packed in, it's not rolled up inside of there, so everything is put in properly. And then you'll want to use a good aluminum foil barrier. The aluminum foil is the heat reflectant. Now, things that people don't realize is that the sauna is not meant to be sealed. You don't put plastic in saunas. I don't use any plywoods even. I use all straight boards, pine wood, that kind of stuff. So use the insulation that you best feel works for you, cost-wise, environmental aspects, your own personal installing it. And then the wood stove is typically, you size a stove based on the cubic footage that you're going to heat. So for electric stoves, you would take your cubic footage and you divide it by 50 to come up with the kilowatts required. Okay. Most sauna wood stoves are small, medium, or large. The problem with a wood stove is that it takes you more area around that stove to be safe. So you have to keep it away from the walls. You have to put in some good cement board behind it. You can do certain things like doing double layer of cement board to get you closer to the stove. or closer to the wall, so you can tuck the stoves in a little bit tighter. You'll always want to build the stove surround to the manufacturer's requirements. You know, they want you to bring cement board up 5 feet from the floor, 3 feet wide. And some people will start to change that because they don't like the way that it looks. Well, there's been a lot of saunas that have burned down because they didn't design them properly. So wood stoves are really more dependent upon size and how do you, you know, a 4x4 or a 4 foot square room, you're going to need a relatively small stove to make sure that you have room for people in there because that stove is going to get really hot. So I'd be more than willing to, you know, talk through that more at any given time.
All right. What, and you have a nice website too. What, how do people get a hold of you?
Through the website, through soulfulsaunas.net. And on my website, I have a little design questionnaire that people can download and fill out and send it to me. And that way they convey their ideas to me. And it's the first way to walk through what they're thinking of. So then I can take the next step in far as the conversation and understanding what they're looking for.
So it's soulfulsaunas.net. .net. Okay.
Soulfulsaunas.net. Yes.
Let's turn to Paul in Madison next. Hi, Paul.
Hi there. Yeah, I'm actually looking to put a separated sauna on my property in the next few months. And I was wondering, so I have framing experience and feel pretty confident about putting the structure up itself. But I'm wondering what the requirements would be when it comes to having like a licensed electrician or a plumber to, yeah, make sure that insurance is going to be okay with all this.
So I've installed another one in Madison, and yes, you need to work with your electrician, first of all, because if you're going to be in the city, you need to have, you know, the proper wiring. I've had to change electrical boxes going into some of my buildings because of the Madison city codes. I would recommend you get your electrician and your plumber together before you start designing. Talk with them, understand what those requirements are. So as you build, you're developing that infrastructure into your building ahead of time. So then you're not having to go back and repair. I can help with supplies, whether it's the cedar or the benches or the doors or the windows. So get your experts involved early on with your project. That's what I would really recommend.
Thank you so much for calling. Let's turn to Steve in Boulder Junction next. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I've got an infrared sauna I bought a few years ago, which is nice, and it's kind of okay. It looks really nice. But it doesn't get as hot as – the air in there doesn't get hot. It heats your body up like a microwave would heat up food or something. And it's okay, but I would like to have it warmer in there. I'm thinking of – is it possible that I could put a small electric heater in there as kind of a supplement to get the air warmer?
I wish I could answer that for you, but I really can't because I don't know about infrareds, and I don't know what the requirement would be to do that. So if you wanted to exchange it with a nice radiant in your house sauna, I could help you with that, but I don't know what the ramifications would be to answer your question there.
But you could actually change out an infrared with
absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
Yep. It would be a whole new room and it would be a whole new structure because they don't have the insulation. They don't have the structure. They're meant to be shipped in panel sections. So, but nonetheless, that would be where I would take you.
All right. Steve, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. So between electric or gas, I guess, too.
LP, yep.
LP gas and wood. Those are the main options. Is there one in your mind that's better than another? Or?
Well, from a quality of steam standpoint and a quality of heat standpoint, nothing beats a good solid wood stove. But you necessarily don't put wood stoves in homes. So yeah. Wood stoves are for outside. I've only put one wood stove in a house, but they already had a Class A chimney built into their home. So they were able to have that hooked up. But if you're looking at in your home, you're typically going to go with an electric stove. And there's a lot of different options out there. I use certain brands that I've used over the years that are reliable. They come with great options and they have a really nice, you know, comfortable pricing. But if you're looking at true kind of pure sauna experience, nothing beats a wood stove with a good splash of water on it to give you some nice, the Finns call the loili. The loili is the magic steam that comes and cleans your skin and gets into your lungs and really makes you transform into a wonderful person.
It's sounding wonderful. I'm remembering my own experiences in saunas, and you're right. You do feel a whole lot better when you're in there and when you get back out. What about on the electrics, which probably most of them are either going to be LP or they're going to be electric if they're inside the home. What are you thinking about in terms of energy costs?
Well, surprisingly, the technology has helped with being very efficient with electric stoves. Several of my customers have talked about using the sauna 3 to 4 days a week over the course of a month and really only seeing about $40 to $50 increase in their electrical bill. And so it really has not added a lot to their system. The thing about electrical systems is now with technology, you can turn it on with your phone. So when you're coming home from work, Larry, you can turn that stove on and you could have it hot before you even get home. You can have LED lights, you can have Bluetooth sound, you can have beautiful systems inside of there. So it offers a lot of options that technology has come into play with the sauna world. And I've made some of them that I said, you know, these are no longer my grandfather's saunas because these are something that work off your phone nowadays.
You know? Work off your phone. And yeah. And you've got the music piped in, or
you got the music, you got Bluetooth speakers in there, you pair it with your house system. And I mean, they're beautiful. You know, I'm installing one this week that has all of those options.
And anybody ever put a TV in one?
I have not seen a TV one. I wouldn't recommend putting a TV in one. The sauna is meant to be kind of a quiet, peaceful place. A lot of people love to see the firelight coming out of the window of the wood stove door, and they don't even put electricity in a lot of these outbuildings. They just want candles and firelight and beautiful heat and lovely steam.
And the wood itself that goes into the building of the sauna, what's the best type in your mind?
Well, so cedar is yeah. the premier wood for the lining inside. Yeah. It's comfortable. It's soft. It's got a wonderful aroma. It's if you manage your stove properly and manage your steam properly, your sauna will be maintenance free. And that's the thing about the wood stove is it stays hot hours after you use it, so it dries the room. And so when you're done, you go in the morning and the sauna is like it's brand new. It's ready to go.
Joel, it has been fun talking with you. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. I learned a lot, and I think our listeners did as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Larry. I appreciate the opportunity.
Joel Torino, his business, soulfulsaunas.net. That's the place to go if you want to go online to learn some more about what his business is up to and what his saunas are up to. All right. Thanks to him, and thanks to our team. Team effort always. Our producers, Clara Neipert and Joel Patnott, our technical directors, Jeff Robbins and Lee Rayburn, and our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening, and hey, stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.
Through that wood pile, just relaxing here in style in the sauna.